Welcome to the Beef Watch Podcast. I'm Aaron Berger, a Nebraska Extension educator. For today's Beef Watch Podcast, we're going to discuss an article from the February issue of the Beef Watch newsletter titled Opportunities for Distillers Feed Byproducts in Your Beef Operation. To have a conversation about the topic, I'm joined today by one of the co-authors, Dr. Galen Erickson, who's a Nebraska Extension Beef Feedlot Specialist. Thanks for joining me today, Dr. Erickson.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Dr. Erickson, one of the major focuses of your career has been on utilizing ethanol co-products in beef operations, thinking here primarily of distiller's grains. You did some of the fundamental research on this topic back 15, 20 years ago. As we've seen some changes in the industry recently, there's been some changes to this product as well. And so you've updated and re-looked at how do product feed today versus maybe where we were 15, 20 years ago. Give us your perspective on what you've seen in terms of the changes and how producers might use that information as they think about the use of distiller's grains in their feedlot operations or in a growing backgrounding or cow-calf operation.
Yeah, you know, I think that a lot of people associate the work we do here at Nebraska with use of distiller's grains because it has been so important to our state. And a lot of people think about the good old days, and I don't know if I like that terminology, but with distiller's grains, when it first came out and we looked at this huge explosion of plants that were going to be built in Nebraska and in other parts of the Midwest, our focus was, you know, how are we going to use it all? How much can we possibly feed? And it's such a good deal relative to its value compared to price. I was using terms like you're foolish not to be feeding it, you know, which is pretty strong language, right? And then over time, by the way, we don't produce too much to use and haven't really ever. And at certain times of the year, it's still hard to get and may not price in very well. So, but over time, it was actually in 2012, ethanol plants looked at removing part of the corn oil from the distiller's grains. And mostly perception, but some reality was that that did decrease the energy content of feeding the distiller's grains. And that perception has certainly been maintained that, you know, distillers just isn't like it used to be. We don't see the performance responses we used to see. And so we wanted to use data, right, to and cattle feeding performance information that we've collected over, it was over 50 experiments and over 6,000 head, which is really powerful for us to compare, you know, what did it used to be like and what's it like today? So one of the things that we saw was that removing a part of the oil, okay, which basically lowered the fat content of distillers from about 12 to 13% to between 6 to 9% fat, you know, pretty small, but maybe cutting it in by 25 to 50% of the fat content. What did that do? And what we observed was that for feedlot cattle, it does decrease the feeding value. But Aaron, one of the things that we've always observed, which many have heard me kind of joke about, that wetter's better. In other words, the wet distiller's grains gives you a little better energy content for finishing cattle compared to modified, which is partially dried. And both are better, quite dramatically better than dry distiller's grains when fed to feedlot cattle. And so, you know, our conclusion from the data is that in the old days, we would see 130% the value of corn if you fed it to cattle in the wet form. And that's probably more like 120 today. In the old days, modified distillers had about 120 to 125% the value. And that's about 115 or 112 today. So it's a little bit lower in what we call feeding value, which is sort of like the energy response. But I got to point out that one thing still is common, and that is when cattle are fed distiller's grains, they do gain more. And that gain response is about a 5 to 10% increase in average daily gain throughout the feeding period. So we still see an increase in gain, but a little less energy content. So they're eating more, and therefore a little lower response in improvement in feed conversion. But wet is still a little better than modified, and both are still better than dry. You know, in Nebraska, because we have a lot of ethanol plants close to the cattle, don't see a lot of dry being fed to finishing cattle. but certainly see more dry being used in other parts of the country. And it's still a good feed, but that energy or feeding value is probably more like 100 to 105% the value of corn.
Galen, help us understand, why is wetter better? What's going on there? Because from my perspective, we're just removing water. Why would that
Yeah.
change the feeding value?
We tried to work on that topic and did some exploration. And the only thing we could really see is that when it's dried, you're drying a liquid stream onto this corn kernel fiber stream. And when you do that drying process, you decrease some of the fiber digestibility. There's actually a fair amount of fiber, but it's very digestible fiber, right? It's very low in lignin. Excellent source of NDF and digestible fiber. But when you dry that liquid stream onto that wetter fibrous product, it decreases the fiber digestibility. That's really the only change we could pick up in our studies. We haven't explored that in a lot of detail, Aaron, right? Is that why does that occur? We don't know 100%, with certainty why all those things change, but it is very repeatable. And I would point out that it's not just repeatable for distillers grains, the same phenomena occurs with corn gluten feed, whether it's wet or dry, beet pulp, whether it's wet or dry, citrus pulp. So it isn't just distillers grains that this occurs with. It seems like these digestible, fibrous-based byproducts, like those I've mentioned, beet pulp, gluten feed, distillers grains, etc., all seem to feed a little better to feedlot cattle in the wet form compared to dry.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I appreciate you taking a moment to give some explanation to that and also referencing these other feeds that we use in Nebraska. Like we do use quite a bit of wet beet pulp in the western part of the state. And so
Yeah.
understanding why or understanding there's a consistency there helps us think about then how can we more effectively use those products.
Aaron, I think it's important for everybody listening that wet is better relative to feedlot cattle than drier products, but it does create some management challenges, right? You got to store that material, shelf life and spoilage are concerning, depending on how long you can feed it up. Moisture can vary. So if you're feeding a lot across time and different loads, you got to track that so you get the right moisture content in your feeding program. So I don't want it's stickier. It sticks to everything, right? So I think from a true cattle nutrition and performance perspective in feedlots, wetter's better, but it comes with some management headaches and some things you got to watch. Now, I got to point out also what is most confusing to me is not that. The most confusing thing to me is that if you are backgrounding calves or if you're supplementing cows with distillers grains, wet, modified, and dry appear to be equivalent in terms of energy, and all of them quite a bit better, meaning 120% or more the energy value is if you were supplementing corn to a backgrounding calf. Okay, so this wetter's better is a feedlot phenomena. And if you're backgrounding calves, doesn't seem to hold water.
Which really is, from my perspective, a good thing because as we think about backgrounding calves or we're thinking about a range situation or going to feed on something like corn residue,
Yep.
sometimes hauling water is expensive. And so that's
Right.
where it's a good thing this dry product is just as good because it's really to our advantage to not be hauling water in those scenarios.
That's exactly right. Now, as with everything, you need to have a sharp pencil and a calculator and make sure you're pricing these on a dry matter basis and delivered to your operation, right, Aaron? So the further you are from ethanol and corn country, the more you're going to have transport on it. And as a result, the dry product, though, normally does receive a premium on a dry equivalent basis to the wet and modified. So you're going to pay more for the dry, but that's because of some of the improvements in storage, transportability, et cetera.
So we've talked about the advantages that distillers grains have and the change that's happened. And obviously with the removal of the oil, a little less energy in a feedlot diet. But as we think about a growing backgrounding cow-calf scenario, still very strong energy value, 120, 130% the value of corn. With that also, though, you bring the rumen undegradable protein or bypass protein.
Yeah.
which really is a value to these growing cattle and to, as we think about cows and early lactation and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. So everything we've kind of been talking about is a little bit more energy focused. Need to remember you're getting that protein. You know, you're getting distillers grains runs 30 to 30, traditional distillers grains a day runs 30 to 35% total protein or crude protein. And as you mentioned, it's an excellent source of bypass protein. About two-thirds of it, 60, we've measured 63, but we always round it. 65% of that protein is RUP or bypass protein. And for those young, lightweight, rapidly growing calves, that's an excellent source of the type of protein you need to get those cattle to perform at their best. And like you mentioned, there's other scenarios like the lactating cow, and it doesn't hurt feedlot cattle any either, right? And so yes, all this discussion that even if you think the price of distillers is not fair or you don't like the price, don't forget you're also buying protein basically the price of corn or less. So it's you know, I won't go as far as saying it's foolish, but it's probably foolish not to really price it and look at it seriously. And a lot of people have asked, well, don't share all this research on the value of it. Well, on one hand, you know, my goal is obviously the markets are going to be the markets and buy it as inexpensively as you can. But you got to know at what point is it still worth buying or not. And that's really what we're trying to establish. And I just got to point out that the protein's a good deal at basically any price that we've seen over the last decade.
What you just talked about there, I think, is a nice transition to what we're going to focus on now with the recent focus on the use of soybeans for producing additional biofuel, number of plants getting geared up in Nebraska. We're going to see some changes in terms of some different feed availability coming here in the next couple of years. How do we think about that? And also, as we think about distillers grains, from either a feeding cattle standpoint or if we're thinking about backgrounding, growing calves, protein supplement on range, how might that shift impact what we have available to us?
Yeah, exactly. We are trying to predict the future, and you got to be careful trying to do that. But all indications are that we'll see more soy products on the market, probably more soybeans being grown. And so at the same time, we're doing work on distillers. A lot of universities and ourselves included are looking at, you know, do we need to revisit and learn again how does feeding soybeans to cattle work and soybean meal and so on. And it's an excellent feed too, but I don't know what's going to happen. I think there's one of two scenarios here. The one scenario is that we'll see a lot more soy crushing and we'll be swimming in soybean meal, kind of like our discussions from 25 years ago with distillers, and we'll see a lot more soybean meal fed to cattle. And that's possible. But the second scenario, which I guess I think is maybe a little more likely, but again, I don't know exactly what'll happen. And that is we will see more soy processing. We will see more soybean meal on the market. And that will displace the distillers grains that's currently being fed to non-ruminants, okay? Pigs and poultry and fish and other basically non-ruminants. And so I think what we'll see is that distillers grain supply or availability to cattle will actually increase because we'll see a little less going to some of these other markets. But, you know, I'm not exactly sure. And I think we need to be prepared for these different scenarios. And again, I would recommend to producers to don't just take for granted that I got to feed distillers. Or don't take for granted that I can't feed soybean meal. Really look at pricing these, and we've got guidance on how to do that, where you can price them on both an energy and a protein basis, and really based on what you need, what's the most economical source for you. So I'm excited about the future, mostly because I like the unknown, and we want to be preparing ourselves and our beef producers for either one of those scenarios.
As we point towards wrapping up, what are some kind of key take homes, things you'd say, hey, if there's something you need to remember as it refers to distillers grains and feeding cattle, here are the key principles.
Well, I think you have to first think about what animal's being fed. So for feedlot cattle, all things being equal, and you're not worried about storage and some of the management concerns. Wet's better than a little better than modified, and both are probably a better choice in finishing systems than dry distillers. The protein has value, but make sure you still are pricing this relative to corn and other energy sources you're going to displace. And I think that this year it's been pretty economical, at least here in the eastern half of Nebraska. And so I think that's got our attention. And even in the winter here, when traditionally it's been pretty pricey, it's been pretty economical. And so I'm excited about that opportunity. But with that, if you're going to feed more because it's priced a little cheaper and you can feed more and replace more corn, we got to revisit some of our things we worried about in the old days, like what's the maximum I can feed? What can I feed through the summer that's not going to hurt anything? We got to watch our sulfur again. So if you are a feed yard, make sure you measure your sulfur in your water, which you should probably be doing routinely. You know, there's other concerns. And so we want to be prepared for producers that want to capitalize on feeding really high inclusions, like we experienced, 15 to 20 years ago. If you're in the backgrounding cattle side and you've got some calves you want to grow on a forage-based diet, you really have to look at purchasing distillers. And again, dry may fit your scenario better than the wet or modified then, and you're not really giving up much energy. Excellent protein source, like we talked, for those backgrounding calves. And then lastly, be prepared for the future and don't forget to price in and compare soy products to the distillers' grains if you're primarily purchasing these for a protein supplement, either in a cow situation or a backgrounding calf. But remember the protein profile, meaning how much is used by the microbes in the rumen versus how much is bypass protein or RUP, is not the same between soybean meal and distillers grain. So we've looked at feeding soybeans and soybean meal and distillers, and we're going to continue to look at that a little bit more in the near future. So really trying to get producers prepared for any scenario they face in the coming years.
Dr. Erickson, thanks again for your time today, for the research you've done on this. I think from my perspective, distillers grains is one of Nebraska's competitive advantages that with our rangeland and corn residue just provides a lot of opportunity both from a cattle feeding perspective as well as for a backgrounding growing cattle perspective. And I think this kind of information you have provided from the research you've done puts producers in a strong position to make good decisions in terms of thinking about a feeding program.
Well, I hope so. We got beef producers got plenty of challenges. It's our job to try and make it as easier for them as we can. But yeah, so this is one area I agree. I think we got some opportunities.
Well, for more information on the topic we discussed in today's Beef Watch podcast, you can find the article at beef.unl.edu. The title of the article we talked about today, Opportunities for Distillers Feed Byproducts in Your Beef Operation.